London Calling, David here. I'm here with Charles Foreman, an ace guide, an ace London Walks guide, and I'm going to get Charlie to talk a little bit about a pretty special walk, and I love the title, Graveyards to Die For. And I think one of the things about this, Charlie tells me this walk can only be done as a virtual tour. So I'm going to hand it over to you, Charlie. Can you tell me a little bit about the walk? Tell us about the walk and why only a virtual tour, and fire away.
Thank you, David. It's a virtual tour because I'm touring all over London. And really where I'm starting is this point in London's history where it suddenly triples its population in about 60 years to become the biggest city, not just in the world, but the world had ever known. And that massive explosion in population created enormous problems, which there were no blueprints for, because we'd never had a city this size. And that's around health, about how you supply the food and drink for people, about transport, about housing, but also about death. And I'm exploring how they dealt with the problem, which meant that if the city was three times as big, three times as many people would die. And not only that, a lot of the people coming to London were from other parts of the country, and they were suffering from diseases they weren't used to. So perhaps the death rate was even more. And if you go back into the 18th century, the tradition was that everybody was buried in the parish churchyard near where they lived. So this sense of identity, almost community, that people were buried at the heart of their community. It's not what Catholics used to do. They always had their burial apart from the community. And of course, the graveyards ran out of space. And some of the parishes started to buy bits and pieces of land on the edge of London to continue burying people. And even then, the space ran out. And so they had to go for some fairly drastic solutions. Some of it was digging down, and some of it was the novel idea that people could be buried outside the city limits. And we get this experiment, if you like, of what now is known as the Magnificent Seven cemeteries round the outside of London at the time, now pretty much on the boundaries between inner and outer London. And those, I suppose, could be called graveyards to die for, because they were places which were laid out as garden cemeteries. A lot of the thinking around garden and landscape design of the time went into those cemeteries and made them the very beautiful places they once were. Now, largely overground, fascinating, great for Halloween, but very often not the spaces that were intended. And if you look at Highgate, for example, one of the most famous of the Magnificent Seven, it used to have these great views down into London, which had been overgrown. And in fact, they're trying to recreate some of that original concept right now with a new plan for Highgate. But I suppose the most fascinating thing really is how they moved out of these very overcrowded graveyards into much more open spaces. And after the Magnificent Seven, yes, the graveyards themselves were closed down and cemeteries were set up pretty quickly, in pretty short order, to follow on in the next generation after those seven. But what I suppose has fascinated me is a dig that has been just completed next to Euston Station. St. James's, you may know the church, it's Wren Church on Piccadilly, then bought land on Hampstead Road as its churchyard was overfull. And that burial ground had a little slice taken out of it when Euston was expanded in the 19th century, and it's been obliterated by the plans for High Speed 2 rail. And in that obliteration, the archaeological dig was extremely systematic. One of the things it showed up was how people protected themselves from the fear of grave robbers. I think the fear was probably much greater than the reality. But the fact is that the anatomy schools were increasingly needing cadavers because as the curriculum changed, doctors needed some experience of anatomy and dissection in their basic exams. And the real prime targets for any grave robbing would be women and children, because the original permission to use dead bodies was connected with people who'd been condemned to death for their crimes. And of course, almost all of those were men. And in this graveyard, what they uncovered was some remarkable techniques that people used to prevent their families' loved ones from being taken from the grave. And one of the most striking of these was a coffin they found with a hole smashed in through where the head of this person was underneath. But the body was still there because it had been bolted down with iron bolts, and the grave robbers gave up at that point. There were other techniques, particularly for children. They found a metal coffin, which once it was closed, it was impossible to open. There was no means of opening it. So you locked the body in, and it was something that would deter the grave robbers because it would be so difficult to open. And they've also, in that dig, found soft tissue, which still hadn't decomposed after 200 years. And that's because that graveyard was in the London clay, which is a very poor substance for allowing decomposition. It doesn't let any air in. And so one of the reasons the next cemeteries went to much higher ground was that bodies decompose much more quickly in gravel and sand than they do in clay. And while it was said that people liked to be on the high ground at Highgate, you also get the same effect to the south. In Norwood, for example, they liked it in order to be near a god. I think the practical reason was it was good draining soil. So all of this is part of the story I'm trying to tell over an hour in those graveyards to die for.
That's fascinating. So I understand now why it's absolutely tailor-made for a virtual tour. It has to be a virtual tour because you're ranging across, you're zooming us back and forth between these magnificent seven. What about visual aids? Have you been able to unearth, to use that verb? Are there some striking images that you've been able to come up with?
Well, there were striking images at the time of those who were attempting to rob graves. And because they are such fascinating places, there are striking images that I've taken. I've got photographs of those magnificent cemeteries and indeed of the next generation that came afterwards, which tend to be less visited, less remembered, but very much influenced by that idea of the garden setting. And so, yeah, it's certainly something not just to listen to, but to look at.
Huh, interesting. Well, I'm very much looking forward to it. Your next outing is in about 48 hours, I think. Is that right, Charles?
If we're going in real time here, yeah, 3rd of November, I've got an outing in the evening. Do join me if you have been tempted by what I've said. And I'm doing it again in January if you miss this November session.
And rolling forward, we're going to run it, I hope, at least a couple of times a year, because it's just an intrinsically interesting subject. And obviously there's new stuff that's come up. I mean, this is fascinating about this Crossrail dig. And again, to use that verb, they've unearthed fascinating things.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Join me.
Thanks very much, Charles. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a ton.